Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Act As Podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and Act As. I'm Linnea Archibald, the Associate Editorial Director for Act As, and I'll be your host for today's show. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by my colleagues, Act As Director Rebecca Hendren, Editorial Manager of Products and Events Carla Kozak, and Editor Jess Flegel for a special Act As update. But first, we'll be discussing substance use disorder from an outpatient perspective with today's guest, Taylor Wiggins, DNPRN. Taylor is a CDI leader with over a decade of nursing experience and a background in risk adjustment and outpatient documentation strategy. She most recently served as a program director for a national CDI team, where she built and led comprehensive initiatives to support accurate diagnosis capture, provider education, and audit preparedness across outpatient clinical settings. Taylor holds a Doctor of Nursing practice and brings a systems-based approach to aligning clinical documentation with evolving regulatory frameworks and value-based care models. She is especially passionate about empowering providers through education and simplifying complex documentation requirements to support clinical accuracy and better patient outcomes. A quick update before we get to our conversation. In response to some Act As member feedback, we have updated our CEU period for listeners, hoping to claim the 0.5 Act As CEU for each episode. Starting with today's episode, the July 16th, 2025 episode, you now have until 11 p.m. Eastern on the Sunday following an episode's release to claim your credit, which is a full 2 days more than previously when the CEU cutoff was on Friday night. As a reminder, you can use the 0.5 Act As CEU toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential. As usual, we will share the instructions for how to claim your credit at the end of today's show, so stay tuned for that. Well, thanks again for joining me today, Taylor. I am really excited to have you here with me today. And we have recently gotten some questions asking for more information about capturing substance use disorder, particularly in the outpatient setting. So could you walk us through what types of substance use disorder related conditions you would typically see in an outpatient setting?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. So the DSM-5 recognizes substance-related disorders resulting from the use of 10 separate classes of drugs. So that includes alcohol, cannabis, hallucinogens, inhalants, opioids, sedatives, hypnotics, and anxiolytics, stimulants, tobacco, other or unknown substances, and caffeine. Substance use disorders does not apply to caffeine, though. So from a coding perspective, the substance use disorder maps to a corresponding ICD-10-F code based on the types of substance use. So to answer your question, in the outpatient setting, especially within our senior patient population, we commonly see alcohol use disorder, opioid use disorder, and sometimes cannabis or benzodiazepine-related conditions. Some patients meet full criteria for a substance use disorders, while others may simply be physically dependent on a prescribed medication, such as opioids or benzos for chronic pain or anxiety. And I'd like to note, one of the key distinctions we focus on in the outpatient setting is identifying when a patient has a physical dependence, such as tolerance or withdrawal, versus a diagnosable substance use disorder using the DSM-5 criteria. So accurate documentation helps us to ensure that the patient's clinical picture is fully represented in the chart and risk model and differentiate between the different types of substance use versus a physical dependence and complicated disorder.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So, and you kind of alluded to this, but obviously many of these conditions are classified in the DSM-5 manual, but I have heard from folks that the terminology used there doesn't always neatly and nicely align with the ICD-10 coding requirements. Have you found that to be a trouble spot? And how do you educate your providers around that topic if they're using DSM-5 terminology versus maybe the terms that you need for code capture?
Yes, this is absolutely a common documentation gap and one of the pain points when we educate our providers. There has to be a crosswalk between the DSM-5 and the ICD-10 diagnoses. So the DSM-5 uses a single term, substance use disorder, and then classifies the substance use disorder by severity, so mild, moderate, or severe. But ICD-10 separates that out into codes for abuse and dependence. And simply put, mild use disorder equals abuse, and moderate to or severe equals a dependence use disorder. So pretty confusing, and it comes down to semantics. So we spend a lot of time educating our providers on that crosswalk. So providers often document based on the DSM-5 terminology without realizing the coding system still uses the older abuse and dependence language. And as I mentioned in our provider education, we walk them through that DSM-5 ICD-10 crosswalk, explain how it impacts code capture, and show examples of how the number of DSM-5 symptom guides code selection when selecting an ICD-10 diagnosis. Additionally, to help our providers, our internal EHR team created a DSM-5 template that assists the providers when selecting the appropriate substance use disorder based on the number of symptoms present. So, for example, if a patient meets criteria for a substance use disorder with 6 or more symptoms present, the template will populate the severity, which in this case is severe, and suggest the appropriate corresponding ICD-10 diagnosis. We also provide job aids and review real-world scenarios to build documentation habits that support both accuracy and risk adjustment. But this is definitely one of the more challenging diagnoses to educate providers on because of that complicated crosswalk.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody could just agree on what terminology they needed, you know?
So we could all get in a room together and agree on it. Yes, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that I don't envy you having to explain that, because I mean, technically, like when the provider is using terminology from the DSM-5, like they're not wrong. Like that is recognized, accepted terminology. Must be infuriating.
It is challenging. It is challenging for sure.
So how does capturing these types of diagnoses impact things like risk adjustment? So for example, like HCC capture, is there any impact on that? And then is there impact on quality reporting programs or publicly reported data or public health, like social determinants of health, any of that?
Certainly. So capturing substance use disorder diagnoses accurately has a significant impact on risk adjustment, especially when the severity meets moderate or severe criteria that maps to a dependence code in ICD-10. It's worth noting that the substance use disease group has been revised to include HCC 135 through HCC 139 in the current CMS B28 model. And additionally, substance use disorders are considered to be conditions that likely persist and are not considered to be curable, as there is a high rate of relapse in patients with these disorders. And if you're to look in the ICD-10 book, there is not a code for history of substance use disorder. Rather, patients who no longer meet the DSM-5 criteria for substance use disorder, except for craving, are considered to be in remission and should be documented accordingly using a substance use disorder in remission code, which does risk adjust in the current HCC model. And to answer your question about quality reporting and social determinants of health, substance use disorders or the documentation of substance use disorders also informs quality reporting programs, particularly when complications like withdrawal or mood disorders are involved. For public health, proper documentation helps us reflect the true prevalence of substance use disorder in our patient population. It supports population health initiatives and may lead to referrals for behavioral health or social support services. Substance use disorders are also linked to social determinants of health, so documentation can further support broader goals around equity and care access.
It really is a very clear area, I think, where patient care is really tied to this, and through that public health aspect and understanding, you know, your patient population through these tracking of substance use disorders, it really feels very clear to me that this is a patient health and care issue, which which in a way makes it easier to educate and whatnot. If, you know, if all the terminology agreed with each other, it would be even easier.
Right. and tracking it internally helps us know the prevalence of how our providers are documenting the condition and how we can deliver better targeted education.
Absolutely. So speaking of kind of identifying opportunities, what common query opportunities are you seeing related to these conditions? And what meat, if you will, are your specialists looking for in the record? Have you taken those common opportunities then back to your providers for education? And if so, has that been successful and well received?
Certainly. So I like to classify the query opportunities you're asking about into two broad query categories. So diagnostic opportunities, meaning a new substance use disorder diagnosis, versus a clinical documentation opportunity. So when we talk about diagnostic opportunities, we frequently query for clarification when there may be evidence of substance use, but the documentation doesn't specify whether the patient meets DSM-5 criteria. So for example, if the CDI specialist notes a positive CAGE screening for alcohol use, or perhaps additional evidence of alcohol use in the documentation, the specialist will query the provider to consider the DSM-5 criteria at the next visit to determine if a substance use disorder is present. This may result in a new substance use disorder diagnosis. Additionally, when there's long-term controlled substance use documented, we clarify whether it's an uncomplicated physical dependence, or perhaps the patient meets DSM-5 criteria for substance use disorder, or maybe none of the above, and the patient is taking it as prescribed and the provider can document, you know, long-term drug use. I always like to give the example when discussing a physical dependence. Perhaps there's a cancer patient taking an opioid for pain management, and in the documentation, the specialist notes that the patient is requesting an increased dose to appropriately manage the pain. The patient may be, in this case, experiencing tolerance to the medication, and it would be appropriate to document a physical dependence to opioids based off of the clinical presentation. So that would be an example of a diagnostic opportunity, and it would result in a query to the provider from the CDI specialist. The second broad category of diagnostic or query opportunities is going to be looking for appropriate clinical documentation to support an existing substance use disorder diagnosis, so that meet criteria you were discussing earlier in your question. So that might include prescription monitoring programs, withdrawal assessments, or perhaps even behavioral health referrals. And transparently, this is where providers struggle the most. So they can successfully identify a substance use disorder. They name the substance in their documentation. However, they may fail to document the symptoms to support the diagnosis in the data service note. And as I mentioned prior, we did build an EHR template to help the providers easily embed the DSM-5 criteria to support documentation, but we have needed to provide additional education in the form of large-scale education across the provider groups, or targeted education to smaller groups, or even one-on-one feedback sessions between the specialists and the providers. And overall, this has been very well received, and we've been really focusing on improving substance use disorder documentation in the past year. And I'm happy to let you know that we have, over the past year with these efforts, improved our documentation based off of internal audits. So that's great news.
That is really great news. It's always so rewarding when you can like concretely show in the data that your work is paying off. Like it's just,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's so rewarding. And so rewarding for your team too, to know that, because they're working hard to send those queries to educate the providers, and seeing it pay off must be really exciting for everyone. So other than the actual substance use disorder that a patient might be experiencing, are there complications or associated conditions that CDI professionals should be aware of when they're reviewing a chart for a patient with one of these disorders? And why is it important to capture those associated conditions or complications?
Yes. So patients with substance use disorders often have highly complex healthcare needs with coexisting chronic conditions. So diabetes, CKD, CHF, COPD, these all still exist in our substance use disorder patients. But CDI professionals should particularly watch for symptoms like withdrawal, intoxication, and chronic conditions such as alcoholic cirrhosis that may be present in longstanding alcohol use disorder. And complications, especially those coded with modifiers like with withdrawal or with psychotic disorder, carry significant HCC value in the V28 model. And it's worth mentioning, older adult patients battling a substance use disorder also suffer from co-occurring mood or mental health disorders like major depressive disorder. These often coexist and need to be documented and coded separately. And capturing these associated condition, it helps paint a fuller clinical picture, it supports medical necessity, and helps with appropriate risk adjustment. And if a patient is experiencing withdrawal symptoms or an alcohol-induced mood disorder, for example, that changes both the clinical management and the coding and documentation of that condition.
Awesome. Thank you. So as we're kind of getting to the end of our conversation, I know we've been discussing outpatient CDI specifically today, but as we close out, do you have any advice for CDI professionals who are reviewing inpatient records? How can they help kind of capture these important diagnoses and support that continuum of care for these patients?
So inpatient CDI plays a crucial role. If a patient is admitted for complications like overdose, delirium, or withdrawal, it's important to confirm whether a substance use disorder is also present. Providers will certainly treat the acute issue, but may not fully document the underlying substance use disorder. So it's important to clarify and appropriately capture the diagnosis during the inpatient stay so that it ensures that that diagnosis is on the radar for the outpatient teams. It supports continuity of care and contributes to both HCC capture and care coordination. And I mentioned it before, but I will remind you that substance use disorders are considered to be those conditions that likely persist, meaning that if they're present during the inpatient stay, we also need to reevaluate it in the outpatient stay because it's often remains relevant to the outpatient setting and should be carried forward so that we can maintain the continuity of patient care.
Yeah, that's a great place to end. That continuity of care and, like you said, the persistence of these conditions, I think, are really crucial to keep in mind when you're thinking about documentation surrounding substance use disorders. It really has a profound impact on patient care and where they are likely going to be experiencing this disorder for a longer period of time. Everybody being on the same page about it is very important.
Oh, yes, yes. Absolutely. And, you know, the outpatient providers, I like to say, they do the lion's share of the work in managing those chronic conditions. But to your last question, the inpatient CDI team certainly plays a role in identifying those conditions so that they can be managed in the outpatient setting.
Absolutely. Well, that is all of our time for today. So thank you so much, Taylor. This has been a really helpful conversation. As always, if our audience has any questions about this topic or anything else, they can email us at info@actis.org, and that goes to the entire Actis team. So we would be thrilled to hear from you. Thank you so much, Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for the Actis Update, which is our regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. Today, like I mentioned at the top of the episode, I am joined by my colleagues, Rebecca, Carla, and Jess, for our special semi-regular group Actis Update. And though I think we would all just love a little summer vacation these days, things are as busy as ever around Actis. So let's dive right in. And Jess, I know that your whole life feels like it centers around CDI week right now, which isn't till September, but it's a summer focus for us. So do you want to tell everyone about the theme and how they can participate in the industry survey? Definitely. I absolutely love our theme this year because I feel like since day one as an ACTS editor, I've heard from everyone in that CDI community comparing the profession to detective work, all those parallels of reading between the lines, following a trail of clues towards a suspect, or in this case, a suspected diagnosis. The official name of our theme for CDI Week is pretty fun. It's CDI and the Case of the Missing Documentation. And we've already got a beautiful poster available for you to download, which shows off this fun detective theme. And I'm currently meeting with the Furthering Education Committee right now as we prepare a list of CDI Week activity ideas for you and also other resources for your celebration, both personally and at in your departments. So stay tuned for those. But also, a huge part of our preparation each year is the CDI Week Industry Survey, which includes questions on 5 hot topics each year that help us gauge current industry trends in CDI and provides the community with an accurate report during CDI Week. And there are still a few days left to take the survey. And this year, our 5 topics are provider and staff engagement, productivity, denials management, outpatient and risk adjustment, and pediatric CDI and OBGYN. So we want to hear from a wide range of perspectives and experience levels and positions in the profession. So I want to personally invite you to put on your detective hat and contribute to this survey so we can gather the most accurate data possible. We'll also include the link in today's show notes, and we've extended the deadline up through the weekend. So you still got time up until Sunday night, July 20th, to contribute to this. And I believe around that same time, there's another big deadline, right, Carla?
Yes. So, Jess, like your life might revolve around CDI Week. I feel like my life totally revolves around the ACTS conference. And that deadline you mentioned coming up is for our call for speakers for our 2026 ACTS in-person events. So that's coming up on July 21st. So that'll be the day after the industry survey closes. So with all your extra free time between now and then, you can try and fit both of those in. We are looking for speakers for the ACTS conference, which will take place April 20th to April 23rd. The ACTS Symposium Outpatient CDI, which is April 19th to the 20th. And the ACTS Physician Advisor Forum, which will take place at the same time as the Outpatient Symposium, April 19th to the 20th. And we will be in the very exciting city of Chicago for these events. So while you're thinking about what you might want to speak on, I wanted to remind you that we've got a couple of different tracks at the ACTS conference. So your session would fall into one of these tracks. The tracks this year include clinical encoding, which is great for specific diagnoses, coding challenges, clinical criteria for certain conditions, validating certain conditions. We've got a professional development and collaboration track that is very helpful for talking about how to develop leadership skills and how to partner with other departments. Our quality and denials track will be back this year as well, which is where you'll see all of our sessions that are focused on compliance, risk adjustment, denials mitigations, appeal strategies, anything that falls under that quality bucket. And then we've got our program advancement and innovation track, which is where you can share what's new or exciting that's happening at your CDI program and hear from other CDI programs across the country. And then last but certainly not least, we've got our pediatrics and CDI expansion track, which is where you can hear about CDI in new or expanding settings, as well as get that pediatric-focused CDI guidance, whether it be on a specific pediatric condition or more in the realm of getting a pediatric program started. And then if you're thinking about applying for our outpatient symposium, I wanted to share that we're especially looking for sessions this year that focus on clinical diagnoses specific to the outpatient setting, as well as advancing an existing outpatient program rather than just getting one off the ground, ambulatory or provider office specific CDI, as well as any regulatory changes and updates that are going to be relevant to the outpatient arena. And if you're thinking about our physician advisor forum, we're especially looking for sessions focused on recruiting and retaining physician advisors, dealing with denials and appeals, risk adjustment, physician advising in pediatrics, and in outpatient CDI. So you can see a full list of suggested topics and apply using the links in today's show notes. You will need to create an account when you go to submit your application, but this just makes it even easier if you decide you want to submit more than one session because it will save all of your information. When you go to create an account, you can also access our FAQ, our frequently asked questions about the application process. Look for the FAQ button in the top right corner of the website. And for those of you who are looking to experience just a little bit of the conference magic while we wait for next April to come, I want to pass it off to Rebecca to share about an exciting upcoming event we've got going on.
Yeah, thank you, Carla. Thanks for all the great information about how to submit for ACTIS 2026. And I do encourage you, if you have a great idea, please don't be shy, don't be hesitant. The ACTIS conference is an incredible way to share your knowledge, but to learn from others as well. It's such a collaborative environment, and it is so amazing because of all of you who are so willing to share what you do. So even if you're a first-time speaker, don't be shy. Everybody has to start, you know, everybody who speaks at ACTIS, it's their first time once. So give it a shot, put your application in. And as a reminder, when you put your, if you get selected for speaking at the ACTIS conference, that does mean you get free registration. So that means you get to come to the conference for free. That registration is covered. So that's a powerful incentive as well. Which brings us back to this past conference, which was so incredible and just jam-packed with phenomenal sessions, particularly in the clinical and coding track, which is the beloved conference staple, which always has such relevant information in there. And so if you did miss the conference, if you weren't able to attend it at all, we want to let you know that we have ACTIS Encore, Clinical and Coding Online, coming up August 12th through 14th. And that is our virtual conference that features the whole clinical and coding online track, plus one of the bonus sessions that we had there. And that's a great way to get the information from the ACTIS conference that is on the clinical and coding topics if you were not able to be there. So it's a really easy process. You just have to register and then participate in the sessions August 12th through 14th. It's in the afternoons Eastern time, so it works for whatever time zone you are in. And of course, it is fully loaded with CEUs as well from a variety of organizations. So it's a great way to get some education, get some CEUs, and stay up to date with what is happening in CDI. So check that out. The link to find out more information and take a look at the agenda will be in today's show notes. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Linnea to see what else we have going on this month.
Yeah, believe it or not, it's not the end of our list of updates yet, which is crazy. If you are wanting to share your CDI expertise, your hard-earned knowledge, but you are still not sure if you want to apply to present at a conference, maybe you're more comfortable in the written form, we also have an opportunity right around the corner for you. The submission deadline for our September-October edition of the CDI Journal is just a couple weeks away on Friday, August 1st. This edition's topic will be global perspectives on CDI and how CDI impacts all areas of healthcare. So that if that kind of piques your interest and you have an article to share, you can use the link in today's show notes to complete the submission form. And of course, if you have questions about that process, feel free to just reach out to us at info@actis.org and we will be happy to help you. And then, of course, if that August 1st deadline is a little too close for you, do keep in mind that our next deadline will be October 1st for the November-December edition. The winter edition's topic will be quality and health equity. So start thinking about your articles now, and remember that deadline is October 1st. So same day that the new codes take effect for 2026 is the day that you can submit for the winter edition of the journal. Easy peasy to remember, right? And with that, now I think we are all out of updates for today, but just a reminder, of course, that you can always find all of the information about everything we just covered in today's show notes, and you can always email us at info@actus.org if you have further questions. As a reminder, before we close out, each ACTUS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those of you who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTUS.org by clicking on the ACTUS podcast link under the Free Resources tab, and then clicking on today's episode from the list on that page. Then scroll down to the recording of today's episode and click play. At the end of the video, as in all the way at the end when the timer gets to zero and the music has ended, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Simply click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting that very brief evaluation. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there as well. To ensure your certificate reaches you and doesn't get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we do suggest that you use a personal email address when completing that CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode CEU is Sunday, July 20th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will no longer be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. Though don't worry too much because we will, of course, be back in a couple of weeks with another opportunity. With that, we have reached the end of today's ACTUS podcast episode. We will be back on Wednesday, July 30th with a new episode. If you would like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show at any time on the ACTUS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All of the links that we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. As always, we'd really appreciate it if you would take a minute and leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by Dion Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please feel free to email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.